Like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those that care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on this floor. There's no reason to go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you may actually be listening. No? All right. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting on the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. We're gonna take 2 weeks rather than do step 8 tonight and step 9 next week. We're taking 2 weeks to do steps 8 and 9. We always like to say when we start the meeting that we're not here to teach. There's people in the room that'll know a lot more about the big book than we do. We're basically here to share our experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So having said all that, I'd like to welcome Jim and David, who've graciously agreed to come and share with us tonight. And I'm going to start on page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. David?
My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
And my sobriety date's October 22nd of 2002, and I have a home group and a sponsor, and grateful to be here. I had made a list when I first got sober in step 4, and kind of went through my fifth step with my sponsor, and you know, I relate to this. This passage with the part where I didn't necessarily not have the will to do this when I first got sober, because I did. I was really excited, but I was pretty young. I was about 25 when I first got sober, and I felt like I didn't know how to live life, you know. And AA and the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have really kind of showed me how to live, you know. And it took me a while to kind of start moving in that process, you know, as far as trying to go and make amends, because I just didn't feel, and my sponsor didn't feel that I was ready to, like, I was just like kind of, I was able to see with my fist up, really. It was like a tool where I was able to see some of the things, but I was still acting out on some of these defects that I had, you know, and my sponsor told me to pray on them, and the first, I guess we can kind of go into that a little bit now, I guess. You know, I had made this list, and it was really to, I wanted to pray about it, you know, and really have a different attitude going in to it with these people that I would have to be making these amends to. And those people, a lot of, like, initially were my folks, you know, like, I can't just wait 7 months or a year to kind of see them. So initially those people that loved and trusted me the most were the people that I initially, like, I need to start acting better, you know, right from the start, you know, and I don't have to go out and make formal amends, but I got to start living differently. And so that's how we kind of started to work that program. And it was really like through service and stuff like that, getting, like, I was never really a good employee, you know what I'm saying? Like, I never got fired when I was drinking, but I wasn't really asked to come back, you know, when I quit. And so I had to start living differently, you know, and going to meetings early, setting up, you know, it really started to make me take responsibility for a position, you know. I would make coffee and it would be like the best coffee ever, you know, and I would want to make it the best coffee ever, and I would make it, you know, I would line up the coffee, the creamer, and the sugar and the water, you know, and just try to make it nice, you know. And my sponsor started to try to take all these things that I'm doing, you know, and this care that I'm taking for these meetings, and try to implement it into my life with work and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'll kind of, I guess, pass it over because I can go on.
Thanks, Dave. I'm Jim Willis. I'm an alcoholic.
Sobriety
date, August 23rd, 1982. Home group is a principal's group of Alcoholics Anonymous located out in Chesapeake. Very grateful for the opportunity to be here. I'd heard about this meeting primarily from David and Graham, so I didn't know if I was getting a good read on the thing or not. And then Graham sends me an email which says, basically, we start promptly, Jim, at 7, and we end promptly at 8. But take as much time as you'd like. So I think that it'll try to be somewhat succinct here. I was thinking about this whole thing about making a list on step 8. Well, I would have loved to have done that, but I had done my 4th and the 5th, and I did just, my sponsor went through that over 3 hours. We got together and went over that, and I remember the power of that day, and I did go home, and I took 6 and 7, basically, what it says here in the big book. Little did I know then that I was sort of giving 6 and 7 a nodding acquaintance. It wouldn't be till many years later till I really began to understand what that meant. But at that time, I did the best I could, and I followed instructions and did what I was asked. Well, after that happened, my first sponsor left. Now, I really don't think my 5th had anything to do with him leaving town. But I how we are when we're in that first year or so, you think, well, man, I must really be messed up. I mean, I sort of knew I was, but I didn't figure I'd drive the first sponsor right out of town. And the guy never came back either. He just left. And wherever Eddie's at, I hope he's well. But so I got another sponsor to fill. His name was Bill. And the very thing that Bill asked me, he said, where are you at with the steps? Was the first question when I asked him to be my sponsor. So I told him what I'd done up to that point. He says, time to move again. He says, you need to start working on this list on step 8. Well, it was still that close to where I had done the 5th. In the 6th and the 7th, that I did have a good understanding of who needed to be on that list, I thought. So I began to make the list. And it ended up like about 50 different situations on there. Not just individuals, but institutions and all that kind of stuff. So I tried to be as thorough with it as I had been with the 4th and the 5th and 6th and 7th. But as I began to make up this list, I was really getting real fearful. I could count, and I knew what come after that. And I'd already read ahead, too. You know how some of us will read ahead, try to get the answer before we're prepared for the answer? So I knew that what was coming next, I had to go out and look at folks like you and talk to them. The financial amends I knew I could pay, but they were from a distance, and I could manage that. But that stuff of having to look at another human being, just like I did at five, was real frightening. And I thought, well, it says down here that all I have to do, remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. And by that time, I'd been sober long enough that something had changed inside of me. And I wanted what you all had. I didn't know if I still understood it real well, but I thought if I could go through that fourth and fifth, I can certainly, you know, and I give that nodding acquaintance to six and seven and moved on to eight. That would make a list, you know. Doesn't mean I got to run right out and do that, but I can make the list. And I remember after making that list, and it took me some time to do that, and the new sponsor asked again, he said, where are you at with this? And I told him, I said, well, I'm about finished. He said, you need to get on with it. And so I did. I think I'd done a pretty good job. And we got together, and we began to look at step eight in that list I'd made. And he began to ask me some very tough questions. And the questions that he began to ask me was, this individual that you have here on this list, let's talk some more, because he hadn't heard my fourth and fifth. He knew a lot about me, but I told him, I said, well, you know, I feel like I harmed the person, and it was a woman, and I thought, you know, it's, he says, well, what's your real reason for going to make amends to her? I said, well, I just told you, I wanted, you know, it's just, he says, or is it really to go back and steal some kind of vicarious pleasure from the past? Well, I was appalled that the man would. And I said, well, that's not what this is for. You know, let's get back to the list. I said, but it rang a bell with me. And what it did is it told me right then this deal was much deeper than just making a list. He was there to go over with me. What were the ones that really needed to go ahead? What were some of those just leaving where they're at, and the amends could be made with him? And we could talk about some of those kind of things, because we don't get well at another person's expense. And some of those things I had on that list certainly would have created problems had I went ahead and followed through under my own direction. Mm-hmm. So I've been really fortunate. I've had men that have been my sponsors over the years that have guided me along the way when some of these things, I had some really tough things in life. Because simply because we get sober doesn't mean we stay clean as the driven snow like it talks. So it was really important for me to be able to get some other good guidance and direction from someone who had already done that and had good experience with, but also asked some of those tougher questions that I don't know if I was really prepared to do at that time. So, what we got?
All right, we're going to press on with page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order, but that is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. We lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores. We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill rather than our talk of spiritual discoveries. David?
Yeah, you know, like what you had talked about. Like I had written this list, and you know, I had a few jobs here and there, and going through. I really had these jobs that I would just kind of go for 6 months, and then just kind of leave. You know, and. Like I was mentioning before, like my sponsor had talked to me about that, and really it was like, try to start showing up to work, you know, and like, you know, not expecting a paycheck, not just like, yeah, you pay me kind of thing, you know, and I really had to start showing up as far as like being there, you know, and not just like punching the clock and then like going to sleep, but like really showing up and doing things, you know. And it took some time, you know. Like I said before, I do this list and I'm still hitting my, like, just I think of like somebody on a train, you know, like on top of the train, and it just keeps hitting themselves on the bridge, you know, and just like, because I kept running into these same issues over and over again, you know, and even when I first got sober, you know, and so I had to really start taking a look at that and rewrite my ACE step, you know, because it was something that I was starting to add on to this list, you know, and it had to take a lot of prayer. It was a lot of going through prayer, and that's something that I think that the program's really like it started to open the door to the spiritual aspect of it, and that was having to ask God to really put me and like it says here, like the maximum service to God and to the people about us, you know, and really start taking a different approach to even to work, you know. Because initially when I first got sober, I thought, you know, drinking's my problem, you know, and once I start drinking, then I'm all good, you know. And it was really like the eighth step and kind of looking into this part of the program really started to show me that I'm living life and I'm just screwing up, you know, and I really have to put this into all of my affairs, you know. And so I remember my first job in AA, like after I got sober, I had that job for a little while, and I broke my anonymity to them, you know. I told them what was going on, you know. And it was a random thing where the lady had been sober for 30 years, you know, like, and so I tell her, you know, I'm like, I've been sober too, you know. And she was like, great, you know. And the only reason why I told her was really, I don't know if I was trying to get out of doing something, or, you know. I felt like, looking back at it, like, times that when I told people, I was always trying to get out of something, you know what I mean, like, or get a pass, you know. It was at that job, I was trying to, like, I think get out of work early for a conference, you know, and that's, like, real spiritual, you know. a police officer trying to get out of a ticket, you know. I remember, like, I could go on a little bit about it, but I was basically driving really late at night, and the guy asked me if I had been drinking, you know, and I was like, I'm coming from an AA meeting, you know, and like totally try to get out of that one. And and this other, I was doing advertising, and I was like trying to get this guy to buy an advertisement, you know, and he offered me a drink, like he told me to go out to lunch and offer me a drink, and that got really weird really quick, you know. And when I told him about it, and he shut down, you know. And his parents were like alcoholics, and he hated alcoholics, so it was like a real uncomfortable conversation after that, you know. He clammed up and was like, ate his food and was like, let's go, you know. And I was like, that's not how I expected that one to go. So when it comes to like breaking my anonymity, or like people, and just you know, I really have to be careful with that. But when it comes to like the people that I've harmed before, you know, those are the people that you know, my sponsor told me with some of those jobs to just to kind of let them go and kind of be a worker at the current job that I was at, you know. And so that's pretty much all I got for that. Thanks.
I love those stories. You know, I was thinking about, you know, this stuff about you not showing up to work. Well, my sponsor, and he, in fact, yesterday he just had his 38th anniversary in the fellowship, my current sponsor, and he tells the story, he talks about that he was from the great Midwestern state of Nebraska, and he grew up around a lot of strong work ethic, of which he was never afflicted. And that's what come to mind when you were talking about that. You know, we don't all get afflicted with the same kind of stuff. So, and I've been in the military, so I didn't have much choice. You were either going to do the deal or, you know, you were out. I mean, there weren't many choices, although I attempted that fate a few times, too. But again, going back to this, it says at that first of the paragraph, it says, probably there are still some misgivings. For me, that was an understatement. Even though I tried to put on all this brave stuff that I was ready to go in there and I wanted to do that, because I did want to grow as a spiritual man. I did know that. And I had, my misgivings were fearful. I don't know if they ranged at the level of terror, but they were certainly ranged at high anxiety, because I knew some of these that were still on that list that hadn't been crossed off that I was going to have. But there was another part here. It says, at the moment, we might prejudice them, but at the moment we are trying to put ourselves in lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. It's not just about me. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I don't believe without, for me, this alcoholic, had I not went ahead with this, I don't believe I could have weighed out what was ahead of me in the years to come about being maximum service to others. And I don't mean just those of us in the fellowship, but other individuals that I had been given an opportunity to provide service to that had nothing to do with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says maximum service to God and the people about us. Doesn't say just alcoholics. And fortunately, again, my sponsor at that time pointed some of those things out. He says, you're preparing yourself. He says, you've done some heavy lifting up to this point, but you're preparing yourself. Don't half measure this deal. And I, as I began to go over that list with him more and more, you know, at that point, I was on the flip side. I thought this thing about the injustice we've done to other people. I kept wanting to go back, what about the injustice people have done to me? You know, I've been beat up in this deal too. It wasn't all a one-way street. And my sponsor kept, I want to say very nicely brought it back, but it wasn't always nice. He said, this isn't about the others at this point. This is about cleaning up your mess. He says, so people can believe in you again, if they've ever believed in you, whether it be your spouse, your kids, anybody else you come in contact with knows your past history. And some of those you may run across, you know, in the future. And so the other thing is, he began to make this thing look like it was really, you either do this deal, or you said you wanted the full power of this fellowship and these spiritual principles, and do the deal. I like to call it today doing the mechanics sometimes. I do the mechanics and the spiritual principles will fall out if I do those mechanics long enough, even in these tough times of trying to go through something like this. That we've all been, if any one of us took that list tonight and look at it, no doubt there are things on there, men and women alike, that we think, I don't know if I'm ready to go there. I just don't know. I want the power of what you all offer me and what you tell me is available here if I do it. But when your fear is right up to your eyebrows, until a friend told me, and it was all I needed to hear, and it was around this, he says, you need about that much more courage than what you've got fear. He says, that's all you got to pray for, just enough. You don't need to be the most courageous one in a bunch. But that clicked with me. That was one of those kind of moments when I said, well, let's get on with this thing. And but the other thing was, is I knew that it says, but a man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set the wrong. That happened for me. But he is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. At that point, I wasn't real grand. I thought I was a spiritual man, but I didn't know enough about it to be able to explain it to anyone. I just didn't. I still felt empty there as far as how would I explain that if I even began, especially when they knew how I'd been. They probably would have thought I was a loose cannon. And because one of the things that happened to me early on was, I remember praying in a meeting one night when it fairly nearly, and I said, if there's a God in this universe, show me what it is I'm supposed to do. And of all things, they had a little raffle, and I wasn't paying attention to what they were doing. They call off my raffle ticket, and I won the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. It scared me. It scared me. So when I get to this kind of stuff, I'm one of them guys saying, wait a minute here. I be careful what I throw out there. He's lobbing. But this is another piece of the power of what we get invested in about these spiritual principles, at least from the way it's been for me. Thanks,
Jens. We're going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God, When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he's done us more harm than we have done him, and though we have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
My dad was, I've talked to a couple people, I've kind of heard a little bit about this, but the number one person I had as far as a resentment towards was my dad. You know, I hated that guy very much so, I guess is the best way to put it without going into expletives, but my sponsor was this was like the one that was like gonna be the one that we had to go with first, and it was, and we had started going into where he had told me like to kind of do some living amends initially, like kind of talk to him and just try to meet up with coffee for him and stuff. And initially, like as soon as I took him out to coffee, it was actually we had gone at lunch and it was like this place called Chicken. I don't even know if they have it here, but it was like this restaurant, and he like all these resentments start brewing up as soon as we even walk in the door, he's starting to he's like hitting on the cash register person for me kind of thing, and I'm like, like, why am I here? Do I really have to do this? And he would start talking about my mom, and that's like, where a lot of things were stemming from like the resentments I had with him and stuff. And he wanted me to like play matchmaker back. I mean, they had been divorced for like 20 years, and it was like just gnawing at me, so I go back and my sponsor tells me you got to keep going, this is you said, and it was like kind of the beginning of this part where it was like remember you agreed in the beginning you would do anything to overcome your victory with alcohol, kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I finally ended up getting to a point where I made a proper amends with him, and I went through this thing, and it was just kind of like whew, like he didn't understand what was going on, and a lot of the resentment I had towards him was because I was very much like we were exactly the same, it's really how it is a lot of the times, but he drank for a long time. He was very he was in the throes of his alcoholism, but he stopped drinking, because he had some brain surgery, and the doctor told him that if he ever drank again, he was going to die, but he never went through any of this stuff, and so he was just like, well, why don't you just use some willpower, just use some willpower, you'll be fine, and he didn't want to get into it. Let's not talk about that. Let's move on, let's move on. And but it was something that changed our relationship from that point on, because that's really when I started to see that I was like him. I couldn't have told you that before that moment, but it was like at that moment that I really saw that where all those resentments were stemming from, and it just, all that stuff, it wasn't anything he did, because he didn't really do much. He still kind of did the same stuff regardless, but our relationship started to change at that moment, and it started to become a relationship that it could be trying at times. I mean, it's not like it was like the yellow brick road of happiness the whole time after that, but it was something that I had to practice some tolerance, some patience with him sometimes. But it was like, I love this guy, it's something that a bond started to form after that, and it lasted through the rest of his life, and I was very upset when he passed, and I was luckily able to be there because of this step. I mean, it was really this was the main thing, and from there I was able to do other amends, like the other amends that the people that I like disliked, because a lot of the other people I just kind of felt like burned by, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't really like they were, I didn't really have anybody that was like, by that point I was like, I hate you kind of thing, you know, but he was, you know. And so after that point, all these other ones felt like, you know, the emotional ones, I was like, boom, boom, you know, I was able to make those. And but it was with him that it really, you know, really struck a chord, and it really started to change my attitude and outlook towards other people too, you know, in my life. So that's about it.
Powerful stuff. Thank you, man. You know, it's kind of interesting how these things happen. You know, I had met Dave before, but you know, this is the first time I've ever met him. But the similarities in some things, because I sit there as you talked about your father, and that was the toughest one for me. I had grown up in a home in Kansas. We were very poor, lived out on a farm, dad drank alcoholic, and a lot of stuff. But he left us when I was about 11. But I watched what he did to our family over those years, and how, you know, that old saying, I will not grow up to be like that man. You know, he never offered me anything. He never gave me anything. And so even though I had other resentments, no one, I don't think, did I resent any deeper. And I don't know if it was just outright hatred, if I termed it that, but it was just, I just didn't have much use for the man at all. I just seen it. But what I think it was, I was tangled up with that too in this whole thing, because I had to become who he was. I had abandoned my family just like he'd abandoned us, and all the other kind of craziness that goes with that. So I think that was part of it. And my sponsor began to tell me, he says, remember this thing we talk about, forgiveness. He says, not just for your dad, but for yourself as well. Because I thought I had forgiven myself, but I really hadn't. When I began to see that, and it began to really generate inside of me, that whole thing about emotional sobriety really began to take hold. And so I made amends to my dad. I think they were kind of the mechanical kind of amends. That, you know, as far as this is way different than, he acknowledged a little bit, but it was one of those kinds of, well, son, yeah, I did a lot of bad things, but that's, you know, and that was the way that all kind of built up. And where this really took hold for me was 5 years later, coming home from my home group one night. I thought I had forgiven him. I thought that was all behind, but I began to go deeper on this stuff. And again, I keep going back to the men who were mentors for me on this whole thing about developing a spiritual way of life. They said it's more than just touching on it and moving away. Go in there and find out where you've been cut up and you've been beat up. And that's where that heavy lifting came in, because 5 years later, I'm driving, my home group at that time was Roosevelt Garden Group many years ago. And I was driving home. We lived in Norfolk at the time. I'm driving home. And I don't know if anything was said in that meeting, but that night I found myself beating on the dashboard of my car. And I was sobbing uncontrollably. And I was thinking to myself, my God, what am I going crazy here? What's, you know, because I couldn't put it to anything. And then what it became clear, I was finally moving through all that hatred and resentment stuff I had toward my father. It was after that when the forgiveness really came through. But it took all those years before. I mean, I'd done the mechanics of it, and I was still doing service work and all that, but it took that long, for as deep as that was, for me to move on. And the good news was I had a way to make an amends, you know, to him in different ways, but one was is when he passed. Six kids, and I was one of the middle ones, and I was asked to pretty well take charge when I got back there. And the reason was the power of this and what my brother and my sisters had seen, the way I lived my life. And none of them could, at that point, emotionally could pull up to do that. So that was another way that I could carry this thing through. So that emotional stuff that gets buried deep within us, it begins to come out through some of this. And that doesn't mean the work's over. It simply means we're doing the mechanics now to do the best we can at this point, or the way I could in my life. At that point, that's the best I can pull off. Tom often talked about when he did his fourth step. It was on one page of paper. Man's been sober over 50 years, but it was effective for him. You know?
Jim. All right, we're going to continue on 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We're there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling on admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. Should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. David?
You know, kind of going back to my dad, like, you know, my parents divorced when I was like 12, you know, and then for that, my dad was still a pretty heavy drinker at that point, you know, and a little while after that, he had his brain surgery, and I didn't see him for like forever, you know, it was like for a long time, and we were from El Salvador, so he was living in El Salvador. He got this, you know, because they have vast like medical advances in El Salvador, so he went there to get his brain surgery. I don't know, but he ended up going there to get his brain surgery.
Hard,
yeah. And so he comes back and he's like not the same. I mean, he was like very forgetful, you know what I mean? And I don't know what happened, but you know, I didn't know that at the time. I'm 13, 14 years old, and I'm like, this jerk, I'm sitting, like, because they were divorced, you know, and it was a bad ending to a bad marriage, and he would call me up, and he would be like, let's meet at the mall, and we'll go out to lunch at the mall, and I would wait for, like, 3 hours at the mall, just hanging out by myself, and come home crying and stuff, and my mom was like, he's such a jerk, you know, and those are the things that, like, I would, like, you were saying, like, I would just bury in the, like, just, you know, it would just hold on to it, you know, and I was just like, he doesn't love me kind of thing, you know, and over the years, I started to, like, over time, it was like, I started to realize, I put two and two together, like, that was around the time of his brain surgery. He got it in El Salvador back 20 years ago, you know what I mean? It's, like, really bad, and it was like, who knows what happened? Maybe he's gone kind of like maybe he forgot, you know, like maybe he has brain issues, you know, like I didn't think about it then, you know, but at that time it was like, you know, all this stuff. And so what's my part in that? When I'm writing my FISTA or my FORCE up, I'm like, I don't know what my part is. Like, I'm just holding on to it for 30 years. You know what I mean? It's that's my part. You know, it's like I guess it was 25 at the time. You know, but I'm like, you know, I'm a when I did my four step, my fist up, I was 26. So I'm like 26. I'm like, you know, my sponsor's like, you're a 26 year old man. You know what I mean? Like, let's kind of move on from that, you know, and let's kind of get past that stuff. And so I couldn't bring that up when I'm making amends to him, you know, but I did, you know, talk to him about my side of the street and not being there as a son, you know, like not at that point, but after that, you know, like not asking him of, like, what I was really out to get was a meal and like some free shoes, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't there to see my dad. I'm like there for like new gear, you know, and he's like a dishwasher, you know what I mean, making like $4 an hour at the time, you know. And so I'm like, I want $100 Bo Jackson was the big at the time, so I'm like, I want $100 pair of Bo Jacksons, you know what I mean? Like, what a jerk, he left me here at 3 hours, you know what I mean? Like, didn't get a pair of new shoes, you know. And and so it was like, I wasn't there as a son, you know, I wasn't there to ask him about his brain surgery, how he's doing, or any of this stuff, you know. I didn't care about his life, I just wanted what was in it for me, you know, and that was some of the stuff that I had to make amends for. Like, I wasn't a son, you know, and it was something that I really wanted to change moving forward, you know. And and again, he was kind of like, he still a wall, kind of like, let's not, he wasn't really into heavy deep conversations. You know, at that point, it's like, let's just kind of move on and have some, like, hit on the wait, like the cash register lady again. You know what I mean? It's like, that's as far, as deep as it got with him, you know? But it was, you know, but it was like, it was something that, you know, I, going back, you know, looking back at our relationship, at like, even now, I can see that that's where our relationship started to change, even with him. Like, you know, and he started being more of asking for help, you know, and I felt good to be at a position where I was able to help him out, you know, or like just even talk to him, because none of my family, they kind of disowned him after all that stuff, you know, and I was really there, and I was really there for him, I feel like, you know, and our relationship was of a father and a son that it might have not been there before, you know, but it was there after my amends with him. So that's it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. Yeah, it's, I had to smile there a little bit when they read this other part up here. It says, rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we're doing and wish us well, and occasionally they will offer us assistance. Well, some of that assistance was, you can leave now. I mean, it wasn't that blatant, but there were some of those kind of situations, and I was thinking back about some of those. Two of the hardest that I made were not towards men that I disliked. I had a lot of respect for both of them. The problem was, is there's another term that's used around the fellowship, and you'll find it particularly over there in the 12 and 12, it talks about character assassination. Mm-hmm. And there had been character assassination on my part. It was much easier to go to an enemy than it was another person that I'd known was a good person. And the way that things had went, I was the bad guy in this situation, not either one of those men. And one was a guy that I was stationed with in Africa. And he had a wife, two little boys. I had a wife, a little boy, and a little girl. And we all did a lot of things together, camping trips and all kinds of things. But there had been after the base was getting ready to close, the spouses and the children were sent home. And one night during a drunken bout, there was a fight. And it changed everything from that point on. I mean, a physical fight between the two of us, and it just changed everything. And his wife and my wife continued to write for years. They were close friends. So when I finally did get sober, and his name was certainly one of those on the list, and I wrote a letter, and I knew his address because his wife and my wife still, you know, communicated. So I wrote this very lengthy letter and explained, you know, about what I was doing, but also, and genuinely told him, I said, you know, how sorry I was about the way all that had turned out. And I was a guy in the wrong, he wasn't. And that, you know, and I tried to explain about this whole thing with amends, and I'm reasonably sure he got the letter, but I never heard from him. Never. And that one I still remember very clear. Now, I did, you know, my sponsor talked with me for months after. He said, did you get a letter yet? I says, nah. And finally he says, it's move on. Because I was, you know, but still today, that does trouble me. Even after all these years, I would have liked to have been able to. And I cleaned up my side of the street, but it did, the damage was done. And that's what I learned from that particular amends was, is that it's not always going to turn out exactly the way I want it. And that I had to accept the damage I had done to another person at another level. This wasn't just about Jim feeling good and you got it all done. Hey, he's off the list. I put my check mark on there and we run with this thing. It didn't work that way in that case. Now, another one was another guy I was stationed with too, but he was here local. And we had drank together. He was not alcoholic, but he had certainly seen the end of my drink. And as a result, after I got sober again, I contacted him and says, hey, how about we get, I'd like to, you know, he said, hey man, how are you? And this, you know, sort of that camaraderie, we're both chiefs in the Navy and we're talking about the old days and stuff. And so I said, hey, man, why don't we get together and have some meat for lunch somewhere? I said, my bit, I'll take care of it. So we knew that was suspect already. Just a drink, I'd be the guy that flipped out on the bill. So, you know, but I told him, I said, yeah, well, we meet in one location. He said, there's a great restaurant over here we can go to. And we left my truck where we were at. I met him. We drove to this restaurant. After I started making this amends, I thought, that was not a smart move. I don't have my vehicle. I'm going to have to get a cab to try to get back to where my truck's parked. So I sat there and across the booth and we're talking. And he said, man, what's all this about? He says, you look good. He said, I haven't seen you in, I forget, a couple years or whatever. He said, man, you look well. He says, what's going on? And then it's when I launched off into making the amends. And I explained to him, I said, Joe, I says, I need to come clean about some stuff. And so I laid it out. And I watched the expression on his face as I'm telling him this, and it began to change. And I'm thinking in my own head, the wheels are turning. I thought, this is not going well here. I mean, I'm not the brightest bulb in the batch, but I was picking up, this is not going to go real well here. You know, I'm thinking, do I have enough money for a cab out of here? But he sat there for a minute, and after I finished, and he looks at me, and he says, I never would have expected that out of you, Will. I said, oh, man. And he was right. He had every reason to say what he said in that moment. And, in fact, that was the last amends I had to make that was on that list. And I had postponed that one for a long time until one day I asked my sponsor, I said, do you think I really need to meet with this guy, Joe? Praying for a reprieve, you know. And he says, you haven't done it yet? I said, no, I haven't. He said, well, I'm not telling you. He says, you know what you need to do. He said, I'm just leaving it at that. And I hated it when he gave me those kind of responses, you know, because it put it all back on me and where it belonged. But I said that even that still comes out hard today, you know, where it belongs, no taking responsibility. But he after he said that, he says, Will, he says, look, he says, I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he didn't have any reason to be in AA. He wasn't a drunk. He said, man, but he said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. He said, you're different. He said, something's different about you. And here was a guy that was so more far advanced as a spiritual being than I was in that moment. I don't know if I could have done that if it would have been turned. We had just talked. I don't know if I would have had the same wherewithal to forgive that old boy the way he did me, and then turn around and say, keep doing what you're doing, man. You look great. Took me back to my truck, and we talked going back, but I couldn't hardly wait to get in my truck because I was feeling guilty about that amends. Why did I get to walk free? So there's two different things that, you know, we don't know. But again, it's like my sponsor told me, do the footwork, man. You've done what you needed to do. He said, you can hold your head up again. You've done what you needed to do. And that's just the way I look at it now. And I try to tell guys I sponsor. I says, look, move on. You're going to get through the deal. That's the spiritual principle behind these steps and the ones we're talking about tonight, as for my little limited view of it. So, thanks.
We're going to keep going on 78. And frankly, I don't even know why they put this paragraph in here. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we're trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we're liable to drink again if we are afraid to face them.
I owe money. when I first got sober, I don't know. I remember I had gotten a DWI on October 16th of 2002. That's one of the whole reasons why I came in this joint, you know, and oddly enough, I had gotten a summons in March of the next year of 2003 to pay a credit card. A credit card was taking me to court, too, you know, and I'm like, I get the summons, and I'm like, my life is shit.
you know. And I'm like, oh man, you know, and I couldn't believe it. And it was, at that time, you know, I had gotten credit cards at like 18 at the community college that I had gone to, you know, and they had a whole like little free pretzels or something, you know, and I'm like, all right, free pretzels, sign me up, you know. So I signed up for like a Discover card and a MasterCard, boom, at my house, like 2 weeks later, you know, for like $500 and a $300 credit limit, you know. I'm like, emergencies, right? And that's like the next week, it's like a sweater at Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, sling, you know, and it like, that, I think that was the only thing I bought on like the $200 credit card was like one sweater, and then for like 6 years, it was like never paid it. You know what I mean? At 25% interest rate, that sweater was like the most expensive. You know? What did that have to do with drinking? Not much. You know what I mean? I guess. I don't know. I just drank it all the way, I guess. But, you know, that started at 18, like, just the downfall of credit, you know, and so I remember in 2002 I had another like $500 credit limit for another card that as well it was like 28% by this point, you know, because it's supposed to go down, you know. I'm just going up, and so I'm up on this credit card. I've had a couple credit cards, and I had just gone really long story, but I ended up in Barbados, right, with this credit card, and I totally drank it. I mean, from like zero to like 500, it was all on alcohol, just going, and the alcohol there, oddly enough, was like a dollar, you know what I mean? It was like for like a beer, like, you know, mixed drinks and stuff, and I'm just going through it like a champ, and I come back, and I had ended up getting a tax return that was able to pay for this one credit card that was going to take me to court. And then over the past 9.5 years, I've gone through little by little, man, and just really kind of gone back and paid stuff back, merge, consolidated. I've talked to those people that are like debt consolidators and like, or like call the, like I had to call the banks and be like, you know, like exactly what it says, like, you know, I've screwed up. I want to close this account. I want to pay it off. Let's make an arrangement, you know. And they've been like, "Well, we'll cut." You know, they're willing to pay, like, work with you a little bit, you know. Like, hey, well, if you pay us off, you'll pay this, you know. I'm like, okay, you know. And I've paid that and stuff. And along with some of the stuff that I had said earlier, like I've screwed up in AA too, you know. And I've had stuff where I've bought, like, there was this guy that had paid, like, we were going to Costa Rica. There was, like, a group trip to go to Costa Rica, and I was like, this guy backed out of it. He was like, do you want to take my spot? And I was like, yeah, you know? And I have, like I said, I have had a lot of credit problems. So, like, I'm like, yeah, sure, you know? And I, like, start paying him. Well, I, you know, come up short. Like, I'm supposed to meet him on a Thursday at some meeting, and sure enough, I, like, see him, but I play the dodge game, you know what I mean? I like met, like I would go last minute, and I was like just living, you know, spiritually, you know. And I'll tell you, when you're like living like that in AA, it's really uncomfortable, you know what I mean? Like people in the program and stuff, because, you know, and the guy would call me up and he's like, where's my money? And I'm like, I'll have it for you, you know, and it just feels really shady, you know. So eventually I paid him, and there was this one guy that had to sit me down, you know, like he wasn't even my sponsor. It was like my sponsor's up north, they call him Pigeon Brother, right? Like, and so he was sponsored by the same guy my sponsor was sponsored by. So he sat me down one night, and he didn't yell at me. He was just like, you're going to get drunk if you keep living like this. You know, he's like, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just talking to you as a friend. You know, like, he'd rather step on my toes than step on my grave, really. You know, and I was flying high. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't even thinking about that when he talked to me about that stuff, you know. And he really sat me down. And, I mean, I was about to cry when he got through with me. You know, I'm like, he's such a jerk. He's like, I'm such a, you know, like I was just this, I just felt so low, you know, and I, it really made me see how I was living, you know, and from that point on, it was really like, all right, let's start to work on these finances, you know, and so like little by little, paying them down, you know, and started paying people back and not feeling like, once you start paying people back, you know what I mean? Like once I paid that guy back in AA, I didn't have to feel like, you know, going into a meeting didn't feel like, you know, weird, you know, and, you know, starting to pay back, those creditors, it really started to open up a whole new life for me that way, you know, and finally, like this past tax season's like my favorite time of the year because it's like I usually am able to get money back, you know, and I'm like this year was no different, you know, and I was able to finally pay off my last credit card, you know, and I'm like, last year we paid off my wife's credit card, you know, so I was like, I could have paid it off last year, but, you know, we had to put her first. And so, it was great, you know, and it was all because people like that guy that sat me down that really had my interest, even when I don't, like, I just want me, you know, just me, like, what's in it for me, what's best for me, and it was really like hitting those blocks in AA that, and people kind of steer me back to the solution that really has kind of saved my life here, you know, and people that have really kind of shown me myself when I've been scared to look at myself, you know, and so I'm grateful for those people too, like you were talking about those mentors, you know, that those people have verbally mentored me, you know, and I've needed it, you know, because so thanks.
Jim, you got 96 seconds.
I know, and Graham's watching too, so I'm going to. Two things real quick. One was, is one of the financial amends I made was to a school I went to when I was in ninth or tenth grade. It was a religious school, and then I went on my merry way, got tangled up in my alcoholism, and so when I got sober, that was about 27 years earlier. And so I was scared just about getting, because I knew the finance on 27-year loan. I thought, oh, I'm screwed. I mean, this is not good here at all. Well, I told them what I was doing, and they says, look, this is how much you owe. They still had it. It was an old brown paper. I mean, but they still had it, and they says, this is how much it will be. And the other thing, they says, if you can't pay it all, we understand something about Alcoholics Anonymous. Pay what you can when you can. And when I paid that one off, and they sent me that the original old yellow copy stamp paid in full, that was almost 30 years old. I mean, so that was one thing. Another thing was, you know, the back in the day when you had American Express cards and it says don't leave home without it? They asked me not only leave home, but the next time you walk it out, mail it back to us. Because my truck, I only had one payment left on my truck. And I was 2 months behind on it. I said, I'm not paying. They're going to come and take my truck for one payment. I mean, well, they were fixing to. Until my sponsor said, you're a real bright fellow, aren't you? He says, pay the bill. I said, well, he says, it's not your money. It's their money. They're just wanting it back. Pay the bill. So financial stuff, like you said, not many of us have problems with that when coming here.
All right, we're going to pass the seven tradition baskets. The seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? John.
I am John, an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
I wanted to remind everybody to put on your calendars the annual Gratitude in Action event, previously known as Saturday I'm James, will be held Saturday, June 22nd at Ghent United Methodist Church. Doors open at 9:30. We're going to have the delegates report. We're going to have multiple workshops. We're going to have a speaker and free food. So please attend, and it's free to attend to all. Please put on your calendars Saturday, June 22nd.
Kevin.
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
The District Archives Committee is compiling a list of old-timers for a Virginia area history book coming out in 2015. So if you have 20 or more years of sobriety, we would love to hear your story. It would really help us in piecing together all the history of Alcoholics Anonymous in its early days in this area. So it's, if you're willing to help out with that, please just talk to me after it.
Thank you. Any other announcements? The Simple Actions Group is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? And just so that we can welcome you, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just have your first name.
Jesse.
Jesse.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve.
Steve, welcome.
My name is Mike.
Hi, Mike. Welcome.
I'm Jen.
Hey, Jen. Welcome.
Jessica.
Hey, Jessica.
Jess, welcome.
My name is Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
Margaret, welcome. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise their hand? Okay, there's literature available. We have some books for sale out by the coffee. There's different pamphlets and so forth. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, until we come up with a better venue. We'll all be there. And thank you, David and Jim. Anybody inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Judy.
It's close. Greg, will you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come.